Jazz's Pubcast with Marvin Bartley and Gordon DL.
So let's just get into this and who will have good time, but enjoying it.
Why not, mate? My parking ran out.
you got parking ticket anyway.
I did see
you getting clamped. You're all right, you're fine.
Just enjoy it.
But we touched on our careers, we touched on how we finished, everything like that. But throughout your career, any player will tell you, the greatest thing about football is the dressing room, isn't it? You know, every morning, especially if you're full-time, you get in there, characters, the way you socialised with your teammates and all that. What's your great memories of your dressing room? Who was the big characters in there?
Probably being at Hibs. You had a real, real good dressing room. You had kind of the older boys, like myself, Darren McGregor, David Gray, Liam Fontaine. Then you had like the middle of the road boys that were slightly younger, Paul Hanlon, Louis Stevenson. And then you had the tearaways, Jason Cummins, Martin Boyle, James Keaton. So, you know, it was a real good dressing room in terms of, we always knew when it was time to work. There's a respect there that, you know, if we said, right, it's time to go to work and training and stuff, the boys are very, very professional with it. But they also knew how to have a laugh, which was brilliant. So I'd say that younger crop at the time, like say the Jason Cummins of this world, Martin Boyle and James Keaton, they were massive, massive characters. Real funny boys, like really good footballers. But in terms of in the dressing room, they were so lively and they kept us all laughing at the right times.
Yeah.
But they also had enough respect to know that, you know, if we were going to, you know, kind of put our foot down, they were willing to do that as well. So, yeah, I mean, Jason Cummins was telling stories the other day, wasn't he? And people saw that and all of that stuff's true. And he probably mellowed down a little bit in terms of some of the stuff he told. But, yeah, fantastic dressing room we had at Hibs. What about yourself?
Dressing rooms are so important. When I started off, I loved dressing rooms, but at the beginning I hated a dressing room because I went in there, 16, I went into the Rangers dressing room. We all changed together at that time. Because obviously you know the dressing rooms at Ibrox are massive and the home one's massive. And I could touch on you had to wear a suit and a shirt and tie. And I remember my first day getting in, Monday morning, shirt and tie, suit on. So I didn't know what peg to take because everybody had their pegs. And these guys, they were so successful. They just come off winning the treble. And there was characters in there, incredible. So you were a new kid, 16 years of age, didn't know what to do. Anyway, I went away at the corner, got my gear off, and I remember it. My first day, I'll never forget this. Goes out, trains. So because you're younger, the guys get sent away, you've got to do a wee bit extra.
Yeah.
So do a wee bit extra, comes walking in, and as I open the door and I walk out of my peg, I noticed my kit's not there, right? And I'm thinking, right, I can't say anything because I know the eyes are on me, right? And I'm sitting there and I'm thinking, right, hold on, how do I play this? I'll wait till they all go away and I'm sitting there and I'm getting on, untying my laces about 20 times. And eventually I says, right, I'll go for a shower and then I'll see what happens. Opens the door to walk in for a shower. There's my suit, shirt and tie, where the water's just coming burning it. On the other shower, my two shoes are wrapped. Mate, I was standing there and I'm thinking, oh my God,
that's my clothes.
And at that time, that was the only stuff I had.
Oh,
so I'm
wow.
thinking to myself, one, how do I get home?
Yeah.
Right? And then second, how am I going to get back in the morning? Because I'm not getting another shirt and tie. So I eventually get this and I'm right. And they gave me a tracksuit. So I had to go home in a tracksuit, right, and a pair of flip-flops. And I remember walking in, my poor mum was sitting there and she looked and she went, oh my God, what's happened? I told her the prank. And in those days, you could go down for the flats and you had these poles and you could hang your washer. My trousers, my shirt, my suit jacket, everything was hanging. And all I could think about was, will it be dry for him? And I went, and I'm thinking, please don't do that to me again. Oh, it was, honestly, it was terrible. And then the sort of things they used to do when you, in these days, they would obviously nail your shoes to the, the floor. And
use the hammer that you banged your toe with, so you didn't have to train.
Honestly, I'm not kidding you on. I've never seen. I used to dread coming back for the training. Yeah. And going, please, somebody else's turn, no my turn. Right?
What was it like on the training pitch? You're talking about big characters in the dressing room. Was there anyone's team you fought in five sides or whatever? I don't want to be on his team, man. Don't want to be on his team during training because they would just be on you as a young boy or whatever.
Listen, the demands were unbelievable. Yeah. We used to play a practice match every Tuesday, right? First team against the reserves. And older people will know this guy, right? You thought you were a dodgem. There was a guy called Tom Forsyth, right? And I'm not kidding you on. He trained the way he played.
Yeah.
He just scythened you,
yeah.
Right? So what had happened was, we just brought in a guy called Gregor Stevens from Motherwell. Now, Gregor was the nicest guy and the most quietest guy you'll ever meet in your life, right? Lovely. Put him on a football pitch and he just becomes a different character, yeah. Right? So the two centre-halves at that time were Tom Forsyth and Gregor Stevens, and they moved me up front. And at that time, Rangers demanded that you hold the ball up. I couldn't hold my shorts up, right? Because I knew what was coming.
Yeah, yeah.
And honestly, even David Cooper in the five-a-side game, he seen Tam Forsyth come and run over towards him. He would kick the ball out of the park and go, you're throwing. And
then he would
run away, right? And Tam and Gregor would absolutely, honestly, just go through you.
Oh, man.
And as a young kid, you were thinking, oh no, you could actually feel the pain
before it came in.
So I always wanted to be in Tam's team.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Tam is probably one of the worst footballers going about. But see if I ever get the privilege of getting first pick, Tam.
Yeah, get him.
Only just get him beside me.
Yourself.
But in these days, it was difficult for a young kid.
Yeah.
Because you were the one that got all the pranks done.
Yeah, of course.
But as the time went on, dressing rooms for me, without a shadow of doubt, Raith Rovers had brilliant characters, absolutely brilliant characters in there. And by that time, you're an experienced player. You get in there and you just had guys like Peter Hurst and Joe McStays, Sean Dennis, who we lost not that long ago. Just guys that were a big Ali Grahams and all these boys. Just great, great characters. Ronnie Coyles and whatever. And you knew that when you went in there, so you would drive up in the car, right? And you'd say, right, who would get in that the day?
Yeah, yeah.
And we would just go after them.
Right? Yeah.
And I remember, even at the golf outings, I remember Ronnie sitting in the front. I'd won the golf, right? And at that time, you know what like is, you have a car going the way home, somebody's driving, the other three or four, three in the back, one in the front. And I'll never forget it, what was the Pringle jumpers, remember?
Yeah, Pringle, yeah. Right?
So you got Pringle, and at that time they were.
Yeah, you were the boy.
Oh, you
yeah,
were yeah. Talking about. So we're going over a fourth road, but we're sitting in the back with the cans and all that, and I'm giving it loudly about my Pringle jumper. And Ronnie, as cool as anything, was sitting in the front, and he's got a colour jumper. He went, oh, that's a lovely jumper, let me see it again. And I went, there it is, you're right.
Out the window.
Right out the fourth door.
You got that in the back.
And I'm shooting, stop the car. Right. And I've got, stop that. And the car went on, right. And I'm pouring up a can of thing. But it was even in the golf, no matter what you've done, training. So see if you're having a nightmare at training, I don't know if you've done this, right. So I used to say to maybe Peter and all that, listen, We're not playing very well today. Picking him, right?
Yeah.
And we would just go after him. I saw that we
deflected
away.
Yeah, yeah, yourself.
It was brilliant. But the dressing rooms, I remember, I always thought I was the top kid there, right? A top goal scorer. So, sitting, we're playing Air United. Never forget this. In the dressing room, I've got my peg, number 8. I've got my jacket up at my peg. No problem. So, Heatherstone gets a shout for Jimmy Nicol, right? Now, I'm sitting there in 18 goals and Craig Brewster's sitting in about 10 behind me. So, Heatherstone gets a shout. So, I don't know what's going on. I'm thinking, Peter was the captain at that time. Gets a shout in. So, Peter comes in, he's got a big smile on his face, right? And he's whispering about and laughing. And I'm looking, I'm going, what are you doing? All this carry on, right? I says, just you make sure you get the ball through to me the day with a wee bit quality. I'll stick it in the back of net as usual and get your bonus, pay your mortgage. So it was all that sort of stuff, right? So Jimmy Nicol came in and read the team. I'm no kidding on, the roar of went up was unbelievable. I'm on the bench. So I stones up and goes, what the f*** are you talking about? I'm on the bench. Heatherstone's, no, he's killing himself because he's number seven.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So I've turned around and I went, he pulled you in there and told you, didn't he? So Peter's killing himself. This is true. Peter's the captain and he's leading them out. Mate, I'm the biggest huff you will ever see in your life. I'm telling you now, I'm calling everybody for everything, right? I'm sitting there with a tracksuit and I'm going, 15 goals, top goal scorer. I'm the bench, right? Heatherstone's now standing at the front with McStays and all of them, shouting, come on, come on, keep him out of the team, keep him out of the team. And I'm thinking, I can't believe that's my team. Exactly. Keep him out of the team, come on. They weren't interested in anything else apart from keeping me in the team. Mate, oh, they, honestly, they loved it. It was the best. All through my years there, I would say it's the best dressing room.
Yeah.
We just seem to have got characters that fit it in to the dressing room. Do you
it's
know
massive,
what I mean?
Isn't it? When you got that, you don't have to have the best players, but if you've got like a really good, tight-knit dressing room, it's got a bit of everything, by the way, professionalism and, like you say, the jokers as well. It takes you such a long way, man.
We used to have a ritual. See, Christmas, every player came to the party.
Yeah.
No, how nowadays people don't go.
I was the one of them that didn't go towards the end.
Well, I was at a function the other day. I knew you didn't go either. But everybody would go, and then on a Tuesday, all the Glasgow guys that travelled down on a Tuesday afternoon, we'd go.
Right, okay, yeah.
It was incredible. The board, it didn't matter who left and who come in.
It's just the same thing.
It was the same thing.
Yeah.
And I remember when we played Celtic in the Cup Final, right? We had a young team at that time. The Crawfords, Jason Dares, Colin Camerons, and all them were coming through at that time. Young players, first Cup Final. And I played in the Cup Finals. And I played with Rangers, and this is Raith Rovers against Celtic.
Yeah.
And I remember in the dressing room going, do they know that we're going out to play in a Cup Final here? It was just joke after joke after joke after joke. And I think that's what made us, at that time, we were a real good side.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We were a good team. And obviously, we went on to win the Cup and we won the league that year. We won the double. We won the championship that year. But to this day, that was all about dressing rooms. And people don't understand how important a dressing room is. You look back at our careers and the start. Were there anybody, young player that you played with or played against, that you thought they're going to go into big things, and where did they go?
There was a few at Bournemouth who came in on loan, of like Adam Lallana would be one. He came on loan from Southampton as a real young boy, gone on to have a brilliant career. But I'd probably say Kieran Trippier was one that came in from Man City to Burnley. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, couldn't cross a ball. And you spoke about being, I think it was at Rangers, where you, as a younger player, you have to stay out and do extras. And Kieran worked on his crossing, his set pieces every single day. You know, and now he's renowned as a specialist at taking them. So he's probably the one for me, because he didn't come in with the, wouldn't mind me saying this, the most ability in terms of being on the ball. He's always an athlete. But where he's gone to in his career, that's totally down to hard work. That's not down to natural ability or anything like that. So he's probably the one for me, although I've been lucky enough to play with, as I said, other players have done really, really well. Kieran Trippier for me, and then seeing him score a goal for England at the Euros at the free kick was massive, because as I said, I know how hard he's worked to have the career he has. What about yourself?
Okay, I was, my memory, one person stuck out for me. I'll get called up to play with Scotland under-18s, and at that time, when you played with Rangers, you always had a chance. Mm-hmm. Celtic, and up front, it was me and Charlie Nicholas.
Yeah.
And in those days, it was West Germany, and Bertie Volks was the manager. I'll never, live in telly, there were about 50,000 there. But the night prior to it, me and Charlie were in a table tennis room, and there were a couple of females in. Obviously.
Not like you.
Watching our table tennis skills. And Andy Roxburgh, only for the fact that Charlie was there, would have probably sent us home. Well, if I was there myself, he'd have sent me home. And I remember playing with Charlie in that game, and I thought to myself, you're a player. What a player you are. And then he was busting on the scene at that time with Celtic. He was one of the best talents I've seen. He was absolutely brilliant. Now, the big argument, and only Charlie will know to this day, was did he pick the right team?
Yeah.
Because he had everybody in England want him, and rightly so. He was sensational with Celtic. He was absolutely brilliant with him. Goal scoring, movement, touch. Wasn't he the quickest player in the world, but, oh, my God, football brain was brilliant for him. And he picked obviously, the London club, Arsenal. He decided to go down there. And, listen, I was never in Charlie's league, but I can understand a young guy, especially, I knew how bad I was in Manchester.
But say London. But
if you go to Arsenal, you go to get that money.
Yeah.
He went on to become a Scotland international. Then it can turn your head a little bit. So looking back, you always wonder if he ever thought, was that the right pick? But as a young player, you just knew you're going right to the top. And I think looking at him, if he'd have probably picked the right club, I think he would have been even better than what he was.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, Charlie Nicholas was sensational.
I know you're a man who knows many people, play for many different clubs.
Yeah.
Who's the biggest name in your phone book? Doesn't have to be a footballer, actually. Biggest name in your phone book. You can't say Mark Wilson.
Well, I used to have Beckham's number.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Then he blocked you.
Yeah. Yeah, I did make the digits up wrong. I'm just trying to think who's... I've got that many contacts in there. Who'd be the biggest name? I've got a lot of football managers.
Yeah.
You know, when I was at Air United, managers would phone you up and give you their numbers, which was brilliant. And I've got to say, the top class managers, the top of the tree, the Walter Smith, Martin O'Neill's, people like that, they were brilliant. You know, they would always say to you, look, here's my number, give us a phone any time that we can help you out. Okay, they never answered.
But you got a number.
Yeah. But you got that. So I've got a few sort of names on my phone book. What about yourself? Who's
probably two that are not footballers either. I played in a tournament for Burnley this time last year. And JJ Watt, I'm not an American football fan, by the way. Mm. We played with a guy called JJ Watt, who I didn't realise how big a American football star he was.
Yeah.
Firstly, when I was out in America and all the people that were Russian, so much I had to get like masses of security. But then all the boys back here who watch American football, like, what the hell are you doing on the same team with JJ Watt? And I was like, who's JJ Watt? And he's like, oh, he's the fifth best player ever in his position. And I remember sitting down and having a conversation. His brother's called TJ, and TJ and JJ, we were having a conversation just about American football and contracts and stuff, and you know how it all works and what the finance system's like. And he's talking about your body fats, and if you're over body fat, every 0.1 was $1,000 per day.
Per day?
Per day. So I was like, what? And I was like, yes. I said, how much were your contracts? And now these boys are signing contracts that were hundreds of millions. So I'm like, right, it kind of makes sense. So he's a huge superstar, and Anthony Joshua will be the other one.
No.
And that's,
seriously?
Yeah, so when I came, Leighton Orient Matchroom were in charge of that, in charge of the football club. So Barry Hearne used to own us at Leighton Orient, but also obviously they own Matchroom. Him and Eddie's now taken over. He's going to a lot of the boxing events, and it just so happened that people who I knew were in his circle as well. So, you know, I used to go to a lot of his like training camps that were obviously behind closed doors. He used to use Tottenham Hotspur's a training complex a lot as well. So to go and see him there, sign stuff for me and all that. So Anthony Joshua and JJ Watt.
So you could pick the phone up to Anthony Joshua just now.
Just FaceTime and say, do you want a square go?
Yeah, go on now. Oh, that's it. I'm impressed with that.
So we're talking about obviously being in dressing rooms and big influences. Was there ever a player that kind of took you under their wing?
I go back to it. And only because I was very fortunate, I lived next to him was Coop.
Mm-hmm.
Coop was absolutely brilliant with me. As a young kid, he's such ability.
Yeah.
You know, he'd natural ability. If you watch David Cooper in the training ground, mate, and sometimes on the pitch, you would think to yourself, just give him the ball and let him do what he has to do. Look, he had bad games like the rest, and the people used to say, oh, could you imagine he had two good feet rather than just the left pair?
Yeah.
He didn't need the other one. Exactly. The other one was for balance.
Yeah.
But see, if you were ever down, you ever get left out or you're in it or whatever, or if you played with him in the reserves, he would always help you.
He'd
always pass things on. I was lucky because at that time there was great pros at Rangers. Sandy Jardine was a brilliant pro, a great pro. Always led the training, always up the front. There was one or two in that dressing room that were really, really, you know, you could see that they would go into coaching and stuff.
Yeah.
We Alec McDonald, Sandy Hearts, they went on to manage Hearts as well. And you know, we Alec was good with you and stuff like that. So there were good people there, but the influence in me probably was Coop because I travelled with him. I spent most of my time with him, and then even in training ground, you would just get wee bits of advice from him. And then if you were getting into trouble a wee bit with the coaching staff, he would just come and speak to you and say, right, come on, you need to settle yourself down, do this, do that, or whatever. So I would probably say David Cooper.
Yeah.
What about yourself?
Darren Anderton, I would say.
Coming the lad through, who played Spurs,
yeah.
In England, yeah.
So, you know, when I first signed for Bournemouth, he was there, coming towards the end of his career, lived in Sandbanks, basically helping the club through a real difficult time. But he wasn't necessarily one that put his arm around you. But now I look back on how he was with us, he always demanded really, really high standards from us. And that's why I asked you about training earlier. Is there anyone's team you hated being on? I hated being on Daz's team. Because he would not let you come down from 100% to even 99%. He'd be on you like, come on, do this better. Give me a better pass, this, that, and the other. But still, you know, even though he's at the end of his career, wonderful, wonderful footballer. He can give him the ball with anyone around him. He'd keep it in training. He was absolutely fantastic. But he always demanded high standards. And as I said, I look back now and think that was absolutely brilliant from him. But at the time, I was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
I'm on Daz's team. So, yeah, he'd be the one for me. And again, a guy with great stories of Man United trying to sign him. You know, Sir Alex Ferguson going around to his house and all those sorts of things and him turning it down. So he's a player who played at the real top of the game.
Yeah, he was English.
England national. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
And still had the hunger and the desire to come and play at whatever he was, 36, 37, with, you know, a boy just coming out of non-league. So yeah, he was massive for me at the start of my career.
We look at dressing rooms, we look at players, we look at who was a great influence. What was the best bit of advice you ever received from a player?
He wasn't a player, but he was a coach at the time. You know, Eddie Howe had to retire early for injury. So he always used to say to us young boys, you know, take every training session because it could be your last.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ever go out there and go through the motions. You spoke about it earlier when you had to go and get a job, you know, through a time in your career and it gave you that hunger and desire to kick on again. He was saying, I think you had to retire at 28. He said, you never know what's around the corner. So you can't come into training and have your head down because... Especially me, because I came from working a 9-to-5 job and then training after. He said, remember what that felt like.
Yeah.
You know, but also if injury takes that away from you, there's nothing worse because you're no longer in control. So that bit of advice always helped because, you know, as well as I do as a player, sometimes you take things for granted. You think it's always going to be there and, you know, suddenly one day it isn't. So luckily enough, we both got to the end of our careers without any major injuries stopping us. But that was massive, that bit of advice to me, because every so often I'd have to remind myself, listen, this could be your last training session. This could be your last match. Then what? You know, so.
And
yeah.
Did you have that mindset every time you played and trained? This could be my last.
I wouldn't say every time, but at times when I started to take things for granted, when I started thinking, oh, this is too easy, or I got into that mindset of, oh, I don't want to do a double session. This is a long day. I just think about what was really a long day when I used to work. But also, the flip side of that is, okay, you think this is a long day. If you get injured today and you can never play football again tomorrow, somebody tells you that, then how are you going to feel? So that was something that I'll definitely revisit an awful lot during seasons. Probably every 3 or 4 weeks, I'd constantly remind myself of that, that come on, you know, things could be a lot, lot worse. This could be your last session. His career was taken away from him. Make sure you fulfill as much of yours as you possibly can. What about you?
I think it was different in our days. I don't really recall somebody coming up and pulling my side and saying, look, here's a bit of advice for you. I wish they had and said, stay at the City Centre. I might have had a good career.
And a bit of money left from it.
Or park your car in another seat. Might have had my sunroof.
What advice would you give into your young self then now? What would you give into a young Daz that's going into Man City?
Great question. Dedicate myself a bit more. I think like... what you said there, I think you get in a mindset that you take things for granted. I should, there's no doubt, and I'm not being, okay, I should have had a better career than what I had, right? Because as a young player, I worked at it, I learned, I was listening, but then sort of things change and you think you're Jack the Lad.
Yeah.
You go to a club like City, you're getting money, you're running about with, like say I was running about with guys like Alex Higgins down there. And,
yeah.
You know, go to snooker tournaments and all of a sudden your mind was going away from what was the most important thing mm-hmm. to you. And before you know it, it catches up with you.
Yeah.
I wish somebody had, I never got a mentor until I was literally out of the game.
Yeah.
I was finished, I'd mm-hmm. gone, I was only about 26, 27.
Yeah.
And I would never have been in that position if I had a strong person beside me. If I look back now, those times between leaving Rangers to going to maybe Raith Rovers, I'd have done a million things differently.
I think
I would have dedicated myself a bit more. I would have, you know, stayed away, just focused on my career.
Mm-hmm.
Because with a blink of an eye, it's over.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. See all the, because at 21, 22, I thought this is going on forever.
Yeah.
And then before you know it, you're looking and thinking, my career's nearly
done.
Done,
yeah.
And then you look at that bit in the middle and you think, should I have done better? Could have done better?
Was it the money jump that you think that did that?
I think it was money.
Yeah.
I think you get relayed where you get into a world, you meet famous people.
Yeah.
As I say, I drove the second biggest snooker game in history is the World Championship was member Davis and Taylor.
Yeah.
Right? And then you had the UK Championship, and it was Higgins and Davis at Guildhall in Preston.
Right.
Well, I drove Alex Higgins home from that. Right. I was there for the session, and I drove him home. We stopped off at Chinese and all that's carry on. I was training it. But I was so away from not concentrating on my football to all the
life of what football brings.
So I was living the life of football and I wasn't really a football type thing.
Yeah.
I hadn't made it yet. And before I knew it, I ended up out the game.
Yeah.
So if I look back in that, I wished I could have given myself that bit of advice, but unfortunately, in those days, I didn't have an agent.
Yeah,
I didn't really have a mentor that you could go and speak to. And I think you wouldn't go and speak to your manager because you would think, oh, he thinks I'm a bit, you know, a bit soft.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
in those days.
You couldn't do it.
So you couldn't really do it.
Yeah.
You couldn't really open up to your manager, your coaches and stuff like that. And I had great guys like, as I say, I had guys like Billy McNeil, John Gregg was there. I played under wee Bertie Auld at Partick Thistle. Great, great guys. And it wasn't until I met a guy called Frank Connor that my career changed. And it was because he went in a different approach. He came and basically gave me the belief back and worked with me to get me where I am today. So I wished I had somebody, or even myself, but at the end of the day, you've got to say, right, that's the path you choose.
Of course.
And you've just got to do it.
You must have had some nights out in your time. You speak about being in Manchester and being a party boy and being with Miss Manchester and everybody else. Who was the wildest teammate you ever had in your career?
Oh, I had a right few at Raith Rovers. I've got to say, a few characters. But I think the best character I came across in my career was a man of many clubs when I was down at Ayr. There's a guy called Paul Kinnaird.
Right.
And I've never come across him until last my life. Terrific talent, the boy. But oh, an absolute banger. Screwball. He would come in and ask for a bit of sign on fee because his engine, his car had blown up and he didn't even drive, you know. And no one of the guys in the dressing room, and I would see him when we went away in pre-season stuff, and his famous one, my name's Kinnaird, show your beard, you know. brilliant thing. But my best memory of him was, and I wasn't a night out. We played Rangers, and I'll never forget this. Played Rangers at Somerset, and he was brilliant, great talent. But you never knew what you were getting him, right? And he got man of the match, and those days he won a bike, right? So Somerset's mobbed, and obviously all the fans come by the dressing room and everything, the home dressing room. So I'm in the dressing room, and Rangers beat us, I think they beat us 3-1 or something, 3-0. And I'm standing there talking, and I'm looking about, and I look and I think, where's PK? And I'm saying, is he in that toilet? Ah, no, Gaffer, I don't know where it is. So the physio came in and went, he's outside. I went, he's what? He says, he's outside. I says, what's he doing outside? He was outside stone his strip trying to sell the bike to Rangers, to the Rangers supporters. But that was the character he was. Mate, he was the best. I loved him. And it was amazing because I remember throwing him off the bus before we were a massive game against Ra. I could tear him up the back. I'd left him out.
Yeah.
And he'd been brilliant the week before and probably shouldn't have, but I had guys like Andy Walker and Hurst, right? And they were my two main guys. And PK had come in, he was brilliant. And I spoke to him before I went on the bus and I thought, I can't have him on this bus.
Yeah. Anyway.
And I remember throwing him off the bus and the driver's sitting like that and I went, drive on. And the driver said, what would I do with him? I went, close the door. And I remember PK go, I've no money to go up the road, right? I says, well, walk, that's your training. And I threw him up. So he was such a brilliant character. But then it's amazing how you change. He come back in as part of my staff about years later as a fitness coach.
Yeah.
And he was absolutely, absolutely brilliant.
Really?
But he was the guy that you knew you would walk in and you were away and you'd always have the Saturday night, right? What I used to do was Saturday night, on you go, boys, have a nice day. But if you're not on the team bus, going to the airport or coming up the road, make your own way home.
Yeah.
10 o'clock, it's leaving. If you can't abide by the rules, sit in your room and have a beer.
Of course.
But if you walked into any place and the laughter was, you could hear it.
Yeah.
You knew PK was in the room. He was such a lovable guy. I loved him. But some real head case, especially, you know what like is when you go abroad?
Yeah.
Right, when you go abroad, it's a different kettle of fish. What about yourself? You must have met some.
Yeah, a few, probably Tomo up here, Stephen Thompson.
Stephen?
Yeah, he was at Burnley, probably for 6 months. Six months with him. It's the happiest day was when Eddie Howe actually released him. I was absolutely delighted that he got rid of him. But he was a brilliant, they say, character, excellent in the dressing room. And he always had this way of like making everyone feel like together kind of thing. Yeah. But he used to always do it to me. He used to go to stadiums. And obviously I came up through the leagues at this point. And he said to me, big stadium, the centre. And I was like, yeah. He's like, I'm not sure you got the ability to play here. Honestly, all the time.
Do you?
Yeah. All the time. I'm like, Tom, I'm starting. You're on the bench, man. I don't think you got the ability to play here. But no, he was excellent. Had a few team nights out and he was the same drunk or sober, just the loudest person. Like you said about PK, you knew if Tomo was in somewhere, you could hear him or he'd be on the guitar, playing the guitar, or have people laughing. But yeah, he's just a massive, massive character. Lovely, lovely guy. Really is, but he's crazy. Even now, I've gone back into Livy and the first thing he writes on the comment is, that's Livingston relegated then. He's not even messaging to say well done. He's gone on a public forum to
well,
slay
he's
me.
Not lying,
exactly. That's what people are writing underneath. Oh, he's not wrong. I was like, oh my God. So never changed Tomo. But yeah, Tomo was a brilliant, brilliant guy. Still is. So what's the best prank you've ever seen played?
Well, I've seen a lot of pranks. The first, well, no pranks. This happened to me when I was, I just passed my test. And you know what like is, you want to drive yourself. They're not a greater feeling. But I wasn't used to driving. I think it was only my second journey into Rangers. And the Rangers fans will know what I'm talking about here. We're playing Hibs Wednesday night. I thought, right, I'm taking the car in. Coop, I think, was in early because he was at a fitness test. So I was getting in myself. So I wasn't playing that night. And the game finished. Gets in the car park. And we get sucked to the traffic lights. And it's a sort of filter to the left to go on at the M8. And I, by pure luck, happened to get there first, right? And I was sitting there and it's the only road out, only them mate. So all the traffic's coming, sitting behind me. So I'm looking in the mirror and I'm thinking, don't stall.
Yeah.
Don't stall, right? So you're thinking of what you were taught. Clutch, biting bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You could see my exhaust. Right. I was sitting there, and the lights are still at red, and I'm sitting there watching, going, don't stall, don't stall, don't stall. And the next minute, my door opened, right? And it was Big Tam Forsyth. And he pulled the keys out of the engine and threw them. Then closed the door. Right, mate. I'm still sitting clutched up. I'm not even, I'm looking, right. And then I'm going, oh my God. So the lights now go to green. And all I can hear is, so what they done was, they sort of, there was one going on the motorway and you could go over the motorway and go another way, right? But all the traffic was jammed all the way to go on the motorway. And I'm sitting there, my keys are down there, right? I know I can hit in the green light. I'm no kidding you on. I have never, I felt like just running away with my motor.
Leave it there.
But it was the biggest, it was, do you know something? I still wake up in a sweat thinking about that. And I'm out trying to get my keys and the lights must have been going about 3 times. And honestly, and then you could actually hear the horns getting peeked further back.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you know what
raging.
I mean?
Yeah, what the hell's going on?
And, you're like, and the boys are fired. Oh no, it's somebody. Little did they know. Honestly, I have never sweated that in my life. But we done one with Craig Brewster at Raith Rovers. And what had happened was Fraser's Player of the Year. You know, you've been to them, the PFA Player of the Year. So I'd won it the year prior. And we all made it that everybody had to go, right? We always took a table because you had to go and support a guy who won it. So I was very fortunate that I'd won it. Anyway, the following year, I gets nominated again with Brewster. And I can't remember, a couple of guys from, I don't know, wherever they were. Can't remember their names. So we get two of us are nominated. So Brewster was brilliant that year. But I'd scored 33 goals. So I'd went 35-33.
Yeah.
Right. But Brewster was different class, right? And I wouldn't have scored him if it wasn't for him. He had a great partnership. Anyway, I've decided that I'm not going, right? Because I thought, it's a boozy night, blah, blah, blah.
I know.
I don't know what it was. It was something that was happening. I wasn't going. So I'm in the shower and Peter comes in. And I'll never, Heatherston knew everything. They went, by the way, you need to go to this. I says, what do you mean? He says, I think you've won it, right? So he says, but we're going to tell Brewster he's won it, right? So he's in and he says, look, I've heard you've won this and all this, Carol. So Brewster, we all met at Joe McStay's house and then we get a minibus in. So Brewster turns up and we're all winding them up and saying to him, right, have you got a speech in that? Because, you know, you're certain to win it. And Fraser doesn't let you know, but somebody sort of leaked to it a wee bit that I had won it, right? And we'd kid it on Brewster. So Brewster turns up in the kilt with four of his mates. Right, and we're in it, so we're having a couple of drinks and jokes. And we're saying, "You go, I've got it here." I says, "Well, look, have a wee. I'll show you mine for last year because I had the same dinner tonight." I says, "I'll show you mine for last year." I says, "Maybe take a wee bit." But how did you approach it and all that? I went, "Well, I've done that and done that." And I, right. Aye, okay. And he had to kill everything. So on the way in the bus, mate, he was hyper. Right, he was high as a kite. So up it comes, nominations for Championship Player of the Year, Gordon Dale, Craig Brewster, two others, right? So he's sitting there, mate, right? Sitting there. And I'm sitting looking at him with Peter sitting there and jokes on that side. And he's sitting, you could see his face. And the winner is, and I went, Craigie. And he looked to her and I went, I went, you were second. Mate, he never spoke to me for about 2 months.
I'm not surprised.
He never spoke to me, honestly. And he never come near me. He wouldn't even go to the same pub as me.
Oh, outrageous, man.
But I was all the aim.
Yeah.
Right. And I went up onto the thing with no to make it worse. Right, I thought it was a smart arse. So I pulls out the speech and I says, delighted to be here tonight. I'm really honoured and privileged. And I stood and I looked at Craigie, right? And I could see him looking at me. And I kept looking at him. And everybody's going, what's going on here? And I went, oh, sorry, that was last year's. Mate, I'm not kidding you on. Stevie could have killed me. He'd absolutely killed me. And that year, to be fair, he should have won it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And I honestly believe he should have won it. But you know what, like, is people vote for you.
Yeah, of right? course. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, no kidding, man. That was. The cheers were coming down. See, when we're sitting, it was like a wee boy had just been told off. He was sitting at the table like that. Oh, this friend, I'm sitting there with a trophy.
Yeah, exactly. Another one.
Here, you have that. I've got one. Have you ever had anything like that?
No, I kind of. I think that's going out of the game now, isn't it? Those sorts of characters and you know, that kind of pranks and stuff. No, not really. That's not something that I remember in my career, off the top of my head, someone would probably watch and say, oh, this happened or that happened. But
yeah,
top of my head, nothing that matches that anyway. I like that second one. I like the car keys as well, though.
Oh, the car keys. Mate, I'm telling you now, the clutch. I was still sitting there like...
Giving yourself cramp.
I didn't even know what happened. And honestly, you could hear the peeps going louder and louder and further down. See, when I get back in, you know the funniest thing in the world was, when I get back in, instead of rushing it, right, it was still,
yeah, and you know, Marathi
maneuvers, handbrake off, clutch, get the bike, oh, and then,
brilliant.
Right, we talk about pranks, we talk about dressing rooms, but you must have witnessed an odd fight with the training ground or in the dressing room after a game or something like that. What's your best one there?
I'll say the best, it wasn't even really a fight, but it just came out of nowhere. Remember we were at Burnley and we were on the training pitch. I think we were doing maybe an 11v11 and a player had committed a foul. And then Kieran Trippier put his hand on the ball and went to play it quickly. And the player had done the foul, a guy called Ross, blocked the ball. So Trips was like, what are you doing? And then Ross just went, what? Headbutt. On the eyebrow, just split his eye, clean open. But out of absolutely nothing. I don't know if he's just having a bad time of it, he wasn't playing, whatever else, frustration. But I remember just standing there like, how the f*** has that just happened? Like, what is that? Where's that came from? Because there was nothing in the training, no bad tackle, nothing to cause that to happen. And to be fair, he got fined 2 weeks' wages for it. But I mean, he just turned around and absolutely smashed him.
How long did it take them to make up for that then? Was it instant?
No, it was a while. It was a bad cut, by the way. It's like a boxer's cut. It was one of them that just, because not a lot of skin there, just split open now. They weren't speaking for a while. And I think Ross paid like 2 weeks fine or whatever it was. We were about to go on a trip to Ireland or wherever it was. So that covered quite a bit of the things for the lads. Mm. But absolutely crazy. I'm trying to think of any other fights in the dressing room. I've had arguments with boys any punches thrown. Yeah. What about you?
One of the ones you're running towards each other and you're thinking, right, who's splitting
us up? Yeah, exactly. Getting louder and louder and louder, thinking someone step in there.
Somebody get in the middle. The one that I've seen was at Rangers when we'd playing the practice match, and it was once again. I had a feeling picking on Big Tam, but that was his character. Tam was just a strong, strong character. Trained the way he played.
Yeah.
You know, he was a great defender. Played with Scotland, but oh my God, he was just so demanding and training everything. And we had Bobby Russell.
Yeah.
One of the best midfield players I played with. And I don't think Bobby got capped. I don't know why to this day, what a talent he was. Rangers signed him from Shettleston. Brilliant, brilliant player Bobby was. But Bobby was a wee bit of a merchant. Great ability.
Yeah.
So Bobby would beat you once and then wait for you to come in and then not beat you. You know, but he had that. Yeah. Great talent. I remember we were doing a Tuesday and big Chams at the back, and I'm playing centre forward, and I'm saying to Bobby, you go and beat as many as you want. I don't want the ball. I want the full time whistle. I don't want up here. And Bobby was doing his normal, and Big Chums, pass it. And wee Bobby sort of putting it, because we were, it was younger then. Couple of 17, 18 year olds. And these guys are playing the first team. They're brilliant. And they're nutmegging him, and he's laughing. You can hear him laughing, like, and he's not passing it. Next minute, somebody comes in, takes the ball away from him. And I see Big Tam just running by me, right? I thought, oh, good, I hope he's away. And he runs up, and Bobby turns around and just smacks him. I told you he'd pass it, don't he pass it? Right, honestly, mate, it was so, so funny. It was just the way you'd done it and then come running back.
And you're thinking, oh, Mark and me now, and he's angry.
Exactly. But I think it was the same. I went into dressing rooms and good coaches, and you could see that sometimes that anger. But we were fortunate then, especially when I was up at Raith, we didn't have a lot of character. You know, if it did get to that heated, did you say, people get away out the road. But within minutes, it was usually back to
it's not always a bad thing, though, is it? Sometimes I think it's a good thing. With boys, it shows a little bit of passion. Sometimes, like, punches aren't thrown. That's when, or a headbutt or something like that. But, like, a bit of grabbing and that, I don't mind, even from a coaching point of view, or when I was a player, I let my teammates do it for a while.
The only thing, I would never condemn it on a pitch. We've seen it a couple. You don't like that. But in the dressing room, sometimes it does need, you know, a bit of character to start it and get everything going again. But no, I've been very fortunate that I've had one or two arguments, but never
anything serious. Same as that.
But we've played under some good managers and strong character managers. You must have had a great dressing down from a manager. What's your best?
Probably had two from the same manager, Neil Lennon. One was Boxing Day away at Pittodrie. And I remember we'd gone up to Aberdeen on the Christmas Day, and Lenny was a big believer in, like, listen, celebrate Christmas, just have, like, you know, half a pint or whatever, and, you know, get yourselves to bed. Not to make a huge difference or any difference at all. And then we went and played on the Boxing Day, and we were getting, obviously, Aberdeen, they were all over us. It's like they had 15 players on the pitch. Mm. At one point, I was counting how many players they had, thinking, what is going on here? So going to the dressing room at half-time, and Lenny's going absolutely mental at us, and I'm like, well, you made me add half a pint yesterday. And he's like, he turns around, so what? And like the physio bed in the middle, he just flips it. I remember Dylan McGeoch's next to me and somebody else, and Dylan just, like, gets his legs out of the way, and then he's going mental, and then he calms down and starts going back to tactics, and then literally have the knock on the door from the linesman, say, right, come back out second half, and goes, and you big you're off. I was like, hell, man, what have I done? He's like, mouthing back. So that was one from him. And the second one was where we played at Fir Park against Motherwell. And he was going his analyst session of it on the Monday, and we were going through it, and people have been making mistakes, etc. And he kept saying, rewind that. And then he would hammer you, Gordon, you done this. And then I knew it was coming up to a bit where literally I had the ball, I had three teammates to pass to under no pressure, and somehow I managed to pass it off the pitch. And I knew that bit of the game was coming up. So I was like, oh, it's my turn. So it's being played. Calvin was the analyst at this point. Being played, comes to me, kicks it off the pitch, and doesn't say anything. I'm like, absolutely buzzing. They go to take the throw, and he's like, hang on, rewind that. And I'm like, oh, no. He's like, what the hell are you doing? Going absolutely mental. And I was like, Gaffer, it's a mistake. He's like, don't you answer me back. You won't play for me again. I said, I hardly play anyway. It doesn't make any difference. He said, absolutely ballistic. And now, listen, love the man to bits. Play paddle with him all the time and everything. But we had a few arguments, I would say. What about you?
One sticks out for me. And it was my first ever game with Man City. I flies down the Thursday, signs with Man City. Billy, Big Billy's the manager. Our first game's Chelsea at Stamford Bridge. And we stay Friday night, we're driving, we're in the team bus, and I tell this story, the bus pulls over at a bus stop, and this wee fat guy gets on with a Man City tracksuit on, right, with black curly hair. So I'm sitting there, and it's my first game. So I'm looking at him, and I think, I don't know his face. Anyway, he's got the Man City tracksuit on, and I'm sitting in the bar. Gets in the dressing room, So as we're getting organised, the board's up there, right? And Gordon, come here. He says, by the way, and that I was playing wide right, Man City. He says, you're playing against a left back here, Joey Jones, Welsh internationalist. I think he's won the European Cup with Liverpool, right? He says, but his legs are gone. He says, gone. Your speed. He says, so, see when he goes that way, don't track him back. Stay wide. We'll get the ball. We'll get to you. Down the wing, cross it in. We'll win this game. They bother. I went, I like this English football. Because in Scotland, you had to track the
fullback.
You had to track the fullback. So I'm thinking, that's great, Rich. So, well, so the dugouts are here. And I'm over here at Stamford Bridge.
Yeah.
So Joe Jones is ramping up and down there on the left-hand side with the left winger, because in the days it was 4-4-2.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And the full-back at Man City, Ray Ralston, he's getting a doing. Right?
Yeah. He's not helping him.
I'm not helping him. But I'm sticking to the plan. So as I look over, I see Big Billy. And he has gone berserk me. Right. Now remember, this is my first game.
Yeah, yeah.
So be pure luck for me. We scored just before half-time. So he goes in 1-0, and I'm thinking, this is going great. Love this football. You know what I mean? I'm full fresh. So I sit down. Billy's got the jacket off, and he's in my face, and I swear I thought he was going to absolutely murder me, right? And the schlebbers are come down, and he's at me. I can't help but chase that fullback. I says, Gaffer, stop it, man. I says, I was told to stay up the park and do chase back. He went, who told you that? I says, the coach. And I pointed to the wee fat guy in the taxi, right? And he's stung like that, right? So this time I looked soon and all the guys in the dressing room start laughing. And he went, what coach? I went, the coach here, there with the taxi on. He went, that's not a coach. That's Eddie Lars, the comedian out of Little and Lars. And they're all pissing themselves, right? I couldn't think any shame. And I went, that's how I know him, right? Little Lars on a Saturday night. He was a comedian. And I went, no disrespect, but I've seen him. He ain't no comedian. Right? He really killed me. Right, be pure luck.
Yeah.
We were 1-1-0. We won the game, right? And at the end of the game, all the boys were taking the piss out of me. And he went, he does that with everybody. He tries to wind them up.
Man.
Mate, honestly. And I didn't know, but if you look at it, I don't know the reason why. Eddie Lards, Little Lards were massive, right? They were massive Saturday night comedy. And for some reason, he was allowed to sit on the bench.
Right.
Don't ask me to this day. He was allowed, a Man City fan, allowed to sit on the bench. And I'm not kidding you on it. It was, see,
brilliant
see,
him.
See, we were getting beat 1-0.
Oh, you were done.
I think Billy would have punched me right through the dressing
room. First and last game.
I was away. I went, the coach. Oh, a coach, and you could see all the other boys. Oh, Big Billy nearly killed me that day.
Right, Daz, I know you've given away a lot of money and your time back to the clubs for various different reasons. What was your biggest fine?
Oh, it's got to be, I've had a few, but it's got to be Man City. I had a knack of always coming up to Scotland, and Billy hated the fact that he wanted me to stay in Manchester. He always thought, look, if you don't settle in Manchester, you're buttoned down, it's not good for you, everything will go wrong. And he was right. So he says, look, no more going to Scotland. So anyway, I think we were at Leeds, and I'd says to him the Friday, I says, look, Gaffer, I need to go back up to Scotland. It's a family situation. I promise you, I'll be back down first thing Sunday morning. He says, right, this is the last time, I'll let you go. But you better be back down the road Sunday morning. Well, little did he know that I'd organised for two or three people to pick me up after a game, because I was heading back in for a night out.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to go back in the bus. And it was so funny, this. So I've ran out the ground into the car, and there's a female in the front driving, and I'm sitting in the back. And next minute, in those days, you get a wee can of lager, whatever, right? So I'm sitting in the back of the car, and it's one of these wee cars, and she's driving down the motorway about 60 mile an hour, 50 mile an hour, and I'm saying, look, we can't get into the city because somebody might see us, and somebody will tell Big Billy, and he thinks I'm going up to Scotland and all this car on, right? I say, so we can't do that. I says, we'll go to Hale out the road and we'll have a few drinks there and all that, care on. And I'm sitting, Jack the Lad, and I've got the tie off. And do you know the one where you're sitting and you think, there's somebody looking at me?
Yeah, right? You feel it.
So what had happened was, as I'm sitting there and taking a car, I just looked around and the team bus had come up, right beside the car. And Big Billy had, no, the steps he got, he came down the steps and he was sitting like that and he's now facing me, right? And I looked through and on the bus, everybody's out the windows like that in the bus, and I'm sitting like that, right? And I'm going, so I started, mate, I'm going, don't stop, who run him, we've now got a chase, right, oh, I'm O.J. Simpson, mate, and I'm going, get the boot down, and he's going, pull her, right, so I came, there's a service station, oh, honest to God. So we get pulls in the service station, the team bus comes in the service station. He gets off the bus, opens the door, grabs me out the door, get on that bus, gets on the bus, right? The boys, they're double, mate, right? They are double up them too. And they're saying, what better than you? So we get back to Manchester. I'll see you. You're in here first thing tomorrow. Get up that road, get home. So I had to get up the road. Went in the next morning and I got fined 2 weeks' wages.
Oh,
and I had to,
wow.
Mate, I never get near a first team for a month. I'll never forget that. Sitting like that, all fully behind me. And I see his big butt and he's creeping right down. You know the size of Billy, right? And it was like he was nearly in the window. Mate, I swear to God, I wanted to die. Right? And he's pulled over and I'm going, put the boot down.
Didn't even get a night out either.
Mate, I didn't get a night out. I get the biggest fine ever, man. Oh, then I never, honestly, I get trained with the reserves. Everybody's got to kill me.
So you told me you're going back to Scotland just so you could go on a night out? Or do you want a two-dayer?
Yeah. Because I didn't want to get back on the bus.
Oh man!
So I kid on, there was a problem in Scotland,
yeah,
right?
To go home.
And then I knew I couldn't, so I had it all planned.
Yeah.
Right, and I was sitting there going, oh, this has worked wonders. And then she was going about 55, so, and the bus just got real upset. I was, the best bit was, pull it!
Yeah, no!
I'm like, I don't know who you're talking about. Adele's away up north.
I remember
meeting Big Billy years after my career and all that. Remember meeting him and he was talking about all the times and everything. I went, do you know what? I don't know how you put up with me. And he went, that's how I get rid of you.
Let's talk about superstitions and stuff and how players get themselves going for matches. We know you spoke about you being sick before matches, but what was your kind of go-to thing to get yourself in that right headspace?
Well, I remember scoring. I think we played St Mirren opening game of the season. St Mirren had just come down, relegated for the Premier League. We beat them 7-1 and I scored 3 that day. Scored a hat-trick. And I remember on the Monday, Jimmy Nicol pulled me and he was slaughtering me. A disgrace, you're a disgrace. All this car on. I'm sitting there thinking, how can he call me a disgrace? Scored 3 at the weekend. But I never warmed up.
Right.
Never warmed up. My thing was, again, I'd wait till the last minute, but back at 2, boys would go out for a warm-up. I would sometimes walk out with a cup of tea with my gear on.
Yeah.
I would never kick the ball, right? What? Never kick the ball. Ask any of my teammates, I wouldn't kick the ball. I never kicked the ball. I never done no kicking or shooting or anything. I would have a laugh and a joke. I'd do a couple of wee runs across the pitch, walk in, have another cup of tea, And then the bell would go and I would be right, ready to go. So Jimmy's, and rightly so, when I think back at now, right, Jimmy played with Manchester United and Jimmy Nicholls warm-ups. I used to watch him. He would do 100 sit-ups before he, and he'd sweat and everything. He'd, and he'd be throwing cold water out of his shell and everything. He'd run, boom, 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 shuttles and everything, right? And I used to look and go, I don't think I'd make it to half-time if I warmed up like that, right? But he played at that level with Man City, yeah. Northern Ireland, Caps, and Jimmy was a brilliant player, brilliant player. And I says to him, I can't understand. I scored 3. He says, your warm-ups are an absolute disgrace. He says, I cannot believe that you're prepared to play a football game at 3 o'clock when you warm up like that. He says, you read the programme, you have 2 cups of tea, you walk out, you don't even kick the ball, you hardly run in the warm-up because Jimmy left you to do your own individual.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It wasn't at that time, it wasn't the team ones, right, and okay. all that. So you basically,
get
yourself ready for 5 to 3. It's your responsibility. Players like to run, Jimmy liked to do sit-ups, press-ups, all that. He liked to be pumped up, right? And then he was, you know, the adrenaline was going. But I was completely opposite. I didn't want to kick the ball. I didn't want to kick the ball into the back of net. Didn't want to do anything. All I wanted to do was go have a couple of laughs and jokes with one or two of the boys, have a wee cup of tea, and sit then, down, and then tie the boots and go, right, we're ready to go. And see, when I think back at now, he's probably right. But I just thought, mate, that was my way of getting myself
that
ready.
That changed as you got older. Like, obviously, when you were going to different clubs, did it begin to go into, like, team warm-ups and stuff?
I'm not going to tell you something, but some of the boys know that story. See, what I told you, my preparation before we played Celtic in the League Cup final at 12 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, you would fall off that seat, let me tell you that. So, and, but it worked. But to be fair, I did take cramp. Yeah. The next time. But it just was my way of warming up. No warming up, because I never warmed up. Everybody had their own.
Everyone's different, I suppose. Different,
That was my mindset. But and that was when it hit home to me, when Jimmy gave me real criticism. And I'm thinking to myself, how can you criticise somebody that's just scored 3 goals
for you? Yeah, yeah.
Right. And he's right, because maybe if I had have applied more to what Jimmy did, maybe I'd have scored 4 or 5.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Do you know what there's always more to get out of yourself.
Maybe more. Right? Yeah. But I couldn't understand that. And as a player, and when you're scoring goals, you seem to be that, well, hold on a minute, it's working for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
like everything else, and if you see the modern day sport, it doesn't matter how good these guys are. Yeah. You always try to go for the extra bit.
Yeah,
you
always, of course, yeah. So, they're always getting that 1% more.
Where I didn't, I was happy to go, I score 3 goals.
Yeah, yeah,
I'm playing next week.
Yeah.
Right? And when I look back in it now, once again, if you say to me, what would Gordon Dale say to that person?
Yeah, yeah.
And it would be probably that, isn't
it?
What about yourself? What was you?
I had 2 things. Like, so when I was at Bournemouth, when I first came from non-league to professional, every Friday night I used to have half chicken from Nando's and double chips. Like, honestly. Every Friday. When I look back now, it's like, what the hell were you doing? Obviously, that changed, you know, the more I learned about kind of like getting myself into the right kind of position or state to play. But always like slow jams. So my music, I would be listening to like Boys to Men or like, honestly, like almost like lovemaking songs before going to play a game of football. So a lot of boys used to have like rap or like, you had your headphones out, the boys on the music used to be like high tempo stuff. Mine was like stuff that sometimes boys would take my headphones and like, let me listen to that. I'd be like, that'll put me to sleep. But I need to be in a state of calm to know that I want to go on a pitch and be mental. Yeah. So that was my kind of switch. But were you the right line?
A real warm up person, stretch and run.
Yeah. So the older I got, I was really worried about my hamstrings. So I used to try and do all that sort of stuff properly. But yeah, before going on the pitch, I was really nice and relaxed. And once I crossed the white line, I used to be really at it. So I'd have been like, come on, Daz, get yourself going. I'd have been after you.
Yeah. But the only thing I would say to counter that for me was throughout my career, and all the games I played, I didn't have a serious injury.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Obviously, it worked for you.
You know what I mean? I didn't pull hamstrings or anything. I remember going through seasons, no missing a game.
Yeah.
you know, occasional wee strain or occasional your ankle swole up with a tackle or something like that. I'd one wee Achilles release in the summer. But apart from that, I didn't have any real, you know how guys pull hamstrings and thigh muscles and stuff like that. But I do think that if I was given advice, I would probably, when I look back at my career, I would probably change a lot of stuff.
Change that up.
Yeah.
Obviously, we've both been very privileged to be professional footballers. Young boys growing up, every young boy's dream and girl, dream at this moment in time to go on and be a professional footballer. Do you miss it?
No, not at all. Since the day I finished playing, I don't think I've ever kicked another ball. I know that a lot of the guys now go and play five-a-sides. You play
over 35.
Over 35. Yeah. I wouldn't find, I don't even want a pair of football boots. No, the minute I stopped playing, fine. What I do miss is everybody will miss the dressing room. Everybody will miss that car share. You know, the stories going up. Everybody will miss the nights out together. Your teammates and whatever. What I do miss is the coaching side of it.
Yeah.
I loved the managing coaching side of it. I really enjoyed that. I liked that challenge that you and your staff had to go and get players and put a team together. And the feeling for me on a Saturday, if it's a manager, if you'd won a game, outweighed the feelings of me winning a game as a footballer
for
some reason.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's because you felt more individually.
Yeah.
But as in playing football, no, I wouldn't thank you for a game. I wouldn't never do what you do. I would never play five-a-side. The only thing I've ever played is, I've done it with Radio Clyde about 5-6, maybe even more than that, was walking football.
Yeah.
And I even hated that. It was too energetic. Crab football's massive. On the knees. On the hands, sorry. But no, I don't. I know a lot of boys do. I miss the actual playing. I don't miss that at all.
Even when you watch a game, like say you played in like obviously a derby team, Rangers and stuff, you don't, when that's on, you don't miss.
Nah. I never look at footballers and think, I wish I was out there, you know, warming up, ready to go on, or playing this cup final and stuff like that. I just, you have your day, whatever. I do miss the adrenaline of a Saturday if I was a manager.
I miss that.
And I miss the feeling if you're successful, if you win a league or you get to a cup final as a manager or stuff like that. I do miss all that, but nah, putting the boots on, and I can't understand guys now that run about football parks. And once you're finished, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you worked at Asda, mate, all your years, you wouldn't go back and empty the baskets, would you?
You
know what I mean? You just give the uniform away you go. But some players still hang on to you. But you obviously play over 35s, do you still?
I don't miss the professional game, though. I think there's probably been one game that I've watched, and that's the Edinburgh Derby. And it's probably been like the last 5 minutes, and knowing what was coming after, you know, seeing Hibs win, kind of what we spoke about earlier, that sunshine on Leaf. But in terms of watching it and thinking I want to be back out there, not at all. I'd probably say play over 35 just for fitness. Just stays me going and having to do a run or any other form of cardio. But that's, that's not anything for me, like chasing that kind of adrenaline or anything. That's, I'm the same as you. I've kind of parked that up now. Like, it's been brilliant being a professional footballer, but I don't miss doing it. I don't miss putting my body through what I did.
Yeah.
That's probably why I stopped at 33 as well, thinking I was very, very dedicated to it. Made a lot of sacrifices. I don't miss that side of having to do that, because I know I didn't have the ability to just rock up like yourself, have a couple of cups of tea and go and score a hat-trick. I couldn't even hit the target, let alone score hat-tricks, mate. So yeah, not missing it. Don't miss it.
That's another episode over, Marv. And once again, thank you.
Right.
Somebody's phoning me.